It's a hot, sexy death summer!
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Rolando.
Hi, Rolando.
Hello, Rolando. We're Roly and Roly. Oh no, I should say my name is Poli. Hey, we got new names. Let's try it again. You're Roly and I'm Poli. And we're the Pillbug Brothers. And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to our annual summer series, Hot Sexy Death Summer 2. We are reviewing The Burning. As always, John will give us the plot in 5 words, we'll give our first thoughts, and then we're going to do a deep spoiler analysis.
But first, we're going to review Yellow Jackets.
I know.
No more. I'm not ready for the summer. It has been gloomy as fuck here for, I don't know, since like November?
June and, gloom. Yeah. So.
And then the sun decided to come out 2 days ago and it's been insufferable, even though it's only been like 80, maybe 80.
Yeah, it's been insufferable 80. And this morning I was cold and I put on a sweater for this hot summer weather that we're having. So I'm burning up. And yeah, this is a weird summer. June gloom. Did you hear about this? You're aware of this?
I'm aware. They're saying it's just what? There's like a marine layer that's been lingering. Mm-hmm. But once it goes away, it's going to be like stupid hot. Which is funny because, like I said, I was in Minnesota for a wedding.
Pancake's house.
Which is why we're not recording 2 episodes today again. it was like, I mean, I liked it, but it was like pretty fucking hot still. I think that there's a difference when there's like a kind of like that Midwest sort of like mountain air, so it's not terrible. It is hot, but it's not like you're dying. As opposed to here where we are still in the mountain sort of, but we're like way lower in elevation, so everything's just dry, so it just feels icky.
Yeah, exactly.
But fun story, I was one of a handful of people, or like less than a handful of people, to be honest, that woke up for an 8 a.m. hike with the bride. It was mostly because I was like, oh, I just want to be a part of like all the experiences. You know, why not? I'm on vacation. Of course, everybody was too hungover. I mean, sleepy because they're tired, not because they drank way too much. couldn't go. And I went, you know, let's have some fun. We drive to this hike. It's super beautiful. But within like 10 seconds of being outside, I'm like, oh, a few mosquitoes. We start this journey. And it takes like, I don't know, like 6 minutes to actually reach one part of the lake real quick, which is the... God, so...
Mississippi River?
I don't know. Anyway, so I could see across the river that was supposed to be Wisconsin, which I did cross a bridge at one point with a couple of people, and we're like, oh, we went to Wisconsin and made a whole thing about it. Every time we went back, like, yeah, oh my God, this wedding's been great, but like, if you guys could have been with us when we went to Wisconsin, it was so beautiful. Just like fields of cheese. The mosquitoes were nice. Anyway, it's just funny because we're just like looking directly at it all the time. But like within like, I don't know, we go to this river and we're not appreciating it because on the way we realize that we are being swarmed by mosquitoes. I mean, I think the only thing comparable to it I've ever seen is where we grew up in Texas, right? Where every time it rained, there'd be like a fucking visible wall coming towards you. Like, all right, step inside real quick.
Yeah.
Can't do much about it right now. So this was like
swamp
that.
Ass Texas.
Yeah. This is like that, but we're like completely covered. And the bride and our friend Scrub, they were both teasing us because they saw the mosquitoes just like, you know, eat our backs and our ass and our calves or whatever. until they both looked at themselves and like, oh fuck. So when we got to the river, we were there for like, I don't know, like a grand total of like 10 seconds of like, oh, this is nice, but like just swatting her arms everywhere. And they were like, hey, how about we like just try to continue and like, you know, just kind of, you know, at a fast pace, just get away from these mosquitoes. And the bride walks up, and within like another like 15 seconds, she was like, nope. And she like proceeds to pull the drawstrings on her hoodie so it like tightens up around her face. She puts her big sunglasses on and starts fucking sprinting towards the car. So like literally running full force towards the car. And we're all just like, where's she going? We're swatting all the mosquitoes away. And like, okay, I guess we're leaving. So we went on this hike for like 10 minutes of just like, oh, this sucks. And so did the mosquitoes.
Nice.
It's a good time. It's got probably my
summer's here.
One of my favorite memories of that trip, even though like there was a bunch of really cool shit. It was like the mosquito thing was like very funny.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think those mosquitoes would have survived from? I don't.
Yes.
Because it looks like the Midwest. Come on,
it does looks look like the Midwest. Even though it's like what, Canada, right? Yeah, so pretty close, like very close.
Pretty close, like yeah. North Wisconsin, North Wisconsin. Yeah. Alrighty, let's move over to TV Corner, episode 2 of From the Kindness of Strangers.
Wait, I got a question for you though.
Yes.
Or should I ask you on the next episode when we record this next week?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. Next week? You might forget.
I'll remember.
Podcast magic. Don't peek behind the veil of how we do the show.
I'm going to write this down and hopefully I'll be able to read it, even though the ink has faded with time.
Weeks of time. It sits in the sun. Bake ink. So,
because I'll leave all my notebooks out to dry.
Yeah. The ink.
I only use calligraphy pens. So
yeah.
It blots of ink on my pages.
I don't know. I'm curious about what you're going to ask me. Does it pertain to the second episode, which saw sort of a continuation? So right now the pacing is kind of like literally we're going hour by hour with the show. It's not like jumping forward too much. There's basically just pretty linear day by day broken up this episode and stuff.
It makes it kind of painful not to watch the next episode, right?
A little bit, yeah. Like, yeah. Not...
Oh, fuck. God, I can power through this right now. That's the thing. Like, and I want to.
So, if I remember correctly, the last episode pretty much set up, like, Donna was trying to get everybody in the fucking diner.
Yeah.
Does that. But, some people don't, you know, follow along. And, like, they get eaten by the creatures. And we pretty much just deal with the people... first night there, the bus people. I don't know what to call them. We should probably call them something. That's not
PC of you to say, but okay.
Oh, excuse me. What is it?
The charter people.
The charter people. Yeah, they chartered. Excuse me.
There's many different types of buses. Okay.
Wait, Grand Rapids is in what?
Michigan.
Minnesota. Michigan. Oh, fuck. I thought they were going to make a... It's still the Midwest. Yeah. Hey,
it's all the same shit.
It's all the same shit.
No. Just kidding, Ohio friends.
That's great. I don't know any Grand Rapids. I'm not going to pretend.
My new friends from Ohio, they're all my friend Clinton's friends, and we all got along because they're all major nerds and assholes like me. I love all of you. Come visit. The Skeleton Boys will show you around. We'll take you to... what was that bar we went for your birthday?
I don't know the name of it. Billiards?
The super fancy place, the cocktail place.
Oh. Oh, Death & Co. Death & Co.
Death & Co.
Yeah. Really fancy. That was super nice.
Great time.
I really like this. We definitely got more of why this is on cable. We got a lot of deaths, mutilations. Horror moments.
My issue with the show right now is like it is almost perfect, But where's all the fucking, right? And where's all the gratuitous shots of, like, underage girls' butts? Just kidding. I'm just, that's a part of my
that's
segue
into movie.
Our film. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That we're going to review.
I feel like they slowed the story down and we're focusing on little pockets of characters and their relationships and then like mixing up their, you know, the old characters. And I think to a satisfying effect, for them slowing it down, it also means that we get a lot of like character stuff and we kind of revealing them, which actually kind of makes sense, right? Because what I'm trying to say is like they learn from Lost, where it can't be like so mythology driven to where you're only pushing that side of it and then there's not interesting enough people. I think that was kind of the downfall of a lot of like post, you know, Lost shows. It's like, yeah. Oh, we got to build this concrete mystery, but then nobody's interesting in that show. And I feel like Jeff Pinkner, he is a Lostie. He wrote some of Lost episodes. So he's essentially set up a lot of the mythology, but is clever enough to focus and build relationships and the characters first before we get too focused on the other. Too focused on the mythology of the show, which is there, which is consistent, which is sort of outlined, which they hint at there's larger stuff going on, but never to the degree that takes focus away of any of the characters. So I do like that aspect of the show.
Do you think there's going to be a moment where they're going to have to, like, the actual people that are alive are going to have to potentially have like a gun off, and then Juliette Lewis will jump in front of the gun and die?
Yeah. So Yellow Jackets is the opposite of show that focuses, that completely muddled its mythology, and then still some interesting characters, but some of them are in boring plots, and it doesn't know which one to serve at times, so you kind of get like this mess of a TV show.
Yeah, this one's really good, and I also think it's serendipitous. I don't think this was our intention. We've just been talking about doing this second season from but you know, celebrating Pride Month as well. And by celebrating Pride Month, we're going to review a fucking fantastic show with some of, in my opinion, the worst actors pretending to be lesbian on a TV show I've seen in a long time.
You're speaking specifically of one of last year's sort of big reveals, is that the Grand Rapids connection, right? Christy, they try to build up a relationship between Kenny and Christy, and Christy revealed in one of the latter episodes of the first season that she was engaged, right? Or
yeah, and is her name Mari? Is that her?
I believe that's correct, but I gotta be just, yes, Mari, yes. And right now, as I felt like when they first saw each other, the emotional weight of it was there, but this episode was a little off. It's didn't quite hit it.
You know that saying, you can cut the sexual tension with a knife?
Yeah.
Yeah, that just doesn't apply here. I have no joke for it because there is no chemistry whatsoever between these two actors. It's like,
I caught that too, and I left it to, well, let's see how this story unfolds. And without jumping ahead, does it particularly go in interesting places? But so that's just kind of a bummer.
And she's only, so Christy's only been there for 6 months?
Yeah, apparently, yes.
Does time work differently in the From world? Has she been there in her head like years? Or has it only been 6 months? Because now I'm starting to question a lot more. I'm like,
that's interesting. Yeah, because Christy didn't say anything. Like, she didn't disagree with her. So obviously the time is, you know, the time is consistent with like
Which is also kind of weird.
Mountain time, or what time zone are they in? <I don't know. laughs> Yeah.
Which I also thought was kind of strange, because there's like, I'm gonna say it's just kind of poor writing at this point, mm-hmm. because
okay.
it's that whole, the character, and if this was like a real life scenario, there'd be no hesitation to try to explain yourself immediately. You know, like, mm-hmm. no, this and this and this is happening. I know it's hard to believe, but this and this and this. But Christy doesn't do that. She just kind of like keeps quiet. And like, what's her name? Mara was like, oh, you know, you've only been like 2 hours away this entire time. And it's been 6 months. It's been 6 months. Your mom and I had to like, I'm like, it's only been 6 months. Like, chill out. Why? I don't know. There was a lot of moments where I'm like, why aren't they, you know, having a real argument? What is going on? Explain yourself, well, Christy. Like,
well, I think they're doing is that they're leaving it open, because I think Kenny's going to be the third wheel. And that needs to come out eventually, too. Like, Kenny's going to make his play for Christy. It's going to play out, I think, pretty much as you expect.
Would you feel if they introduce another character, and it doesn't matter who this character is, but as another potential love interest for Kenny?
I think Kenny is getting another love interest, but I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Oh, because I was just saying.
Nah, I know some stuff too.
What? Just kidding. How do you know that? We haven't even seen the next episode yet.
I don't know.
Can't go ahead until next week when we record the next episode.
Yeah, properly record the next episode. No, I'm surprised you mentioned that LGBTQ relationship, because possibly we could get the most exciting relationship. We're going to get Donna might hook up with Tilly, one of the other, bus people. What is the name? Charter people.
The charter folk, yeah.
The charter folk, yeah.
The Greyhound guy gang.
Tilly was eye fucking Donna so hard in that diner. You just know shit's blooming between Tilly and Donna.
Oh, it's gonna be so good.
It's gonna be so good. Yeah.
And Boyd's gonna have to leave. Oh well, I mean, he's still stuck in like that cave right now, right?
So what did you think about that? Boyd got to the top, spoke with the chained man, and the chained man said a lot of weird shit. So it's got
a lot of weird shit. It made me think that the chained man was a part of, I don't know. Well, I have like a couple of theories already, because to begin with, I think I randomly texted you like, who the hell threw the chain down for him to like come up the well? Because Chain Man was chained against the wall.
Right, yeah.
But I kind of have like a feeling that they're in a simulation?
That'd be disappointing, but I know, yeah.
And Boyd's wife was right about it, but she was just mentally unwell because of what was going on.
A little bit A, a little bit of B.
This is like giving me sort of like that Black Mirror episode with Wade Russell.
Mm-hmm. Video game one?
Yeah.
Is that the, I just had a thought. So early last season, we saw there was painting on the wall. There was like a ship and there was like all this other stuff. I think this place is just like haunted.
Chapelway?
Yeah. It's a crossover. He looked like a holdover to the time, because it seemed like they had those old, you know, boats situation, if I remember correctly. Am I remember the right show? I think I am, but I don't remember.
There's like scribbling on the wall when what's her name? The mom, the wife,
Tabitha.
Tabitha.
Yeah. Okay, so that did happen, right? That like they drew like woods and there was like some paintings and shit. And
God, I'm waiting for us to go back to Yellow Jackets and I don't remember any of their names either.
Yeah.
This is one of those things like I don't remember. I keep calling them the mom, the dad, or the wife, or the husband. But we know who we're talking about because they're the main people we followed in the very first episode.
Yeah. Was it? So I'm assuming that's that he must have was a holdover from that time. Like they're like stuck in time, ghosts. Mm. They don't die situation. And he did a really gross thing. That man that was chained up shared his blood with Boyd, which is disgusting. By the way, don't share blood with anybody. So he gave him the oh, roaches, the bugs under the skin thing. Yeah, John, stay away from sharing blood, please.
And do you think the actor, I'm not too familiar with him, but we all know what who he is now. Jamie McGuire is going to be a more pivotal role since he's the most like recognizable, the smiley vampire thingies, whatever they are.
We did get featured this episode,
very
didn't he?
Prominently, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the advertisements have been built around him. Next.
Oh, what's this?
I don't know. I
have no idea what happens in the next one.
Yeah. Was it this? Yeah. I think it was this episode.
Yeah, where he walks under the bus and he like plays with the steering wheel for a second before the old people make noise in the back of the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He eats them. Yeah. Yeah, they did. I mean, he's been in all over all the advertisements and stuff too.
Yeah. Well, because he's mm-hmm. very recognizable. I mentioned this already, right? He kind of looks like that actor that played
the Joker.
The Joker, yeah. In the Gotham series.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we recently saw him in another movie.
Oh.
I didn't know this until I just checked who he was right now. He was, I'm assuming, either one of the aliens or one of the party goers in Kids vs. Aliens. I think he was one of the aliens.
Oh. That's not the only connection we have to Kids vs. Aliens, either.
Shit, because they're all aliens and from.
There's another actor. We should probably mention real quick that storyline between Boyd's son and his Fatmia. Like, she seems like she's kind of tired of living there. She kind of gets sensitive about it. The people who don't listen, they're like, oh, we're outside and stuff, and they get eaten. And then she gets real like fuck you, stuff like that. Like, she gets real
That's
upset
what
about it.
Has that conversation with his son, right? Because Boyd is able to come back, it finds his way back.
I don't think that's happened yet. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, I saw the fucking trailer to the episode next week. That's what happened.
He saw scenes of in the trailer then.
Really weird. Yeah, I saw this 35-minute trailer to the next episode.
I thought also, what is it? Julia, I kind of feel like they've changed Julia, right? Because she was kind of the rebellious, you know, daughter or whatever that went to live with the people in the house. Oh, and now Julia? She's like, Julie. She's also seems to be her family now. So
I wonder if all it takes is your mom goes missing potentially in the underground, mm-hmm. and then your dad is trapped in a bunch of rubble of a house you were staying in. I wonder if that's all it takes to start missing your parents.
It's a start. I'm just saying she was a lot less annoying than she was than she was in the past. I guess annoying is not the right word, but I don't know any other word to describe it. So just gonna stick with that.
Are you seeing a theme here? Did you ever watch a TV show called Yellow Jackets? There was a character called Callie. It was
yeah, dude. She's exactly like Callie. yeah. Once Callie, like, I think not to rehash that, but I think they purposely rehabbed Callie because she was so awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
They got her on the Yellow Jacket team there. So I don't think they did the same thing with Julie here. I think she's a little more interesting now that they kind of mended over that relationship.
Yeah, I root for her a lot more. Even though now I don't root for what's her name?
The EMT lady. The EMT. Yeah, I don't like her very much. Yeah, Christy. Is he Christy?
Chris.
He's Chrissy. Something like that.
Oh, Christy, yeah.
Really good episode. I think people should be watching this. Do you have any other thoughts?
Jade is trying harder to understand at this point more of what these images are that are happening and why he keeps seeing symbols right before the images. So he seems to be the only one that's like observant. He's the only one that's more of like a detective than anybody else, even though he's going a little bit mentally unwell.
Like his behavior is like unusual methods. He has like unusual method behavior, how he like deals with all the mystery. But he's kind of like, what did he? Well, he said this in the next episode. I shouldn't say this, but so.
What do you mean the next episode?
Never mind. It's all the same trailer. There's a lot of cut scene with.
Because Jade breaks into Victor's room.
Yeah,
with that kid who, like, the kid is becoming more and more interesting. Like, the kid is starting to talk like an adult for some reason.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
like now they're paired up, right? Sort of. I don't know why. Like they're
yeah,
it's kind of weird, but cool. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Elizabeth Saunders, we're rooting for you.
You also want to quickly mention that Randall pulled a gun on Kenny, also. So that's kind of fun. Oh, he seems like a really cool character. He's a really, really interesting character. Like, because he's kind of like antagonistic, but he's also
understandably.
He seems like he's going to be the Daryl of, like, you know, like Walking Dead. He feels like the Daryl character.
Oh, that'd be pretty fucking rad. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm here for that. Yeah. Because, like, a lot of these characters, like, a lot of the. I feel like they did try to write it that way, especially when Fatima was like yelling at these people, like, you need to get inside. And a part of you is like, oh, these stupid people. But then also like, I don't know. I would probably hide out in the woods too. Like, I'm not sure. Like, I don't, at that point I wouldn't know what to do. Like, I don't think I would trust these random people and be like, no, stay in this building with us. We're going to lock you in. Like, no, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Feel bad for him.
Yeah.
And then, that was his name? Edgard? What the hell is it? I'm making up a name.
Just making up names. I don't know.
Ellard. He sounds like he's got like a fake name from like the 1960s.
Ellis. You're talking about Boyd's?
Elgin.
That's the new passenger? Is that?
Yeah, the new, which he potentially has like a. Psychic abilities.
I feel like he's been there before. Yeah, they kind of allude to him. Was this the first episode? He was like saying he already knew where he was. He's like, oh, we can't be here, blah, blah, blah. And then he freaked out or whatever. We shouldn't be here because he had dreamed it. Dreamed
I where have he was. Another theory about that. I wonder if he was somebody that was a part of whoever the people are on the other side of the phone or.
I feel like he definitely
run from it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's why when he woke up on the bus, like, no, we can't be here. He was like, oh, he got fucked and got sucked into that world.
Yeah, yeah. I think he definitely has secrets, but that just why they introduced the character. So we'll see how it plays out. But I think he's probably part of the larger, at least one part of the larger mystery of the show. Alrighty. Very good. Let's move over to our main review of The Burning. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For The Burning. Tony Malam's The Burning, written by celebrated beloved writer Harvey Weinstein. Yeah. Coming in at number three for the burning, former employee has burning desire.
Sure.
Coming in at number two for the burning, Cropsy is not wrong. Cropsy justice.
Yep. Yep.
I was going to say justice for Cropsy, but that's only four words. Coming in at number one for the burning, Harvey Weinstein's rapey men's camp.
Yeah, we should. So for Hawk Sissy next summer, we do extensive amount of research to pick these movies. But something, by what I mean is that we Google a couple of words and the movies pop up. And my surprise, this was Amir Max, Harvey Weinstein, who's his brother? Bob Weinstein's first movie. And we should probably just talk about all the baggage of, like, quickly just, like, it is Harvey Weinstein being...
like an assault on so many different levels of, like, this movie is disgusting at points just because of how, like,
exploitive,
like,
misogynistic.
Yeah, super misogynistic. Like, it's just bad. Like, the only thing they didn't have in here was racism, because you got to have people of color in a movie.
Oh, we had a really funny orderly. I mean, not funny, but like we had a black orderly.
That's right.
Cliched black orderly. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, there's like a main character who is, his whole sole purpose of the whole movie is that he is a peeping Tom and like a pervert.
Yeah, there was a lot of boys forcing themselves on women and like cornering them and then like, you know, forcing them into some sexual situations. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and it was so hard not to see that and think of Harvey Weinstein, everything.
Yeah, it's fucking
he
awful.
Did. It's like literally this is like the inception point of like his rise, right? And life ruining start right here.
It's almost like a lot of these moments, I feel like some other writer was able to spin him in and being like, yeah, but this is why it's justified that, you know, this is going to be a movie about a bunch of camp kids getting killed. Because a lot of these, especially the guys, are awful people, so it's okay. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if they were written that way because Harvey Weinstein was like, yeah, I mean, it's romantic because women want to be wanted. So you got to force yourself, you know, like shit like that, where you're like, that's disgusting, which is why I'm very disappointed in myself, because I ultimately really enjoyed the movie.
So I agree. I actually and you know this, I'm not a slasher guy at all, but I did enjoy this movie. Which is, I thought it was interesting, but it was so hard.
It was also very, like, slapsticky sitcom-y for the most part. you're like, why is this so funny?
But this is also kind of, I wouldn't say historic, might be too strong of a word, but it's also credibly noteworthy in that this is Jason Alexander's first movie, this is Holly Hunter's first movie, and this is Fisher Stevens' first movie.
Yeah, yes.
So... that on top of like a pretty, like, pretty well told story. Unfortunately, it has all of these horrible acts these men treat their women like. There's, I wouldn't even say there's any like romance in this movie. It's just like predatorial. Take your shirt off, and like it just kind of just seemed.
Our hero is kind of romantic. Well, not even romantic. Like it seems like everybody wants to be romantic with them, but he's like, no, not right now. The camp comes first. What is his character?
Well, I mean, that's just set up because he was part of the kids who pranked
What? What are you saying? What is the spoiler you're about to mention?
Is that a spoiler?
Yeah.
I mean,
you're not supposed to really know until the end of the movie.
Oh, okay. Okay, fair enough. My bad. I broke our own rules. I apologize. I'll put 100 in this jar if you want.
100 smooches.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like the most, I mean, I can almost.
Tom Savini's work is in this too? Yeah, like, oh my God. Dude, there's so many things to like about it. But like I said, like I had a really hard time.
The rapey stuff, all that stuff, the assault stuff, which is like even in newer movies. So it's like I said, it's one of those things you kind of look past it because you know that these people are going to get their comeuppance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the one part that like really kind of like, I don't want to look at the screen right now. It's fucking uncomfortable. Is there's a part at the, like towards the beginning of the movie where they're all playing like softball. And then there's like, not like one, not like two, but like three different cutaways of like this underage, like super tiny girl's like butt and like swim. It's just, she's only wearing like swim bottoms, I guess. Like not even shorts like everybody else. And it's like her, like they're playing softball. So she's doing that thing where like, you know, everybody wiggles their butt for, I don't know why that. I would love to talk to somebody that plays baseball or softball. Like, why do you got to wiggle your butt before you catch a ball? I'm just curious. But yeah, it keeps cutting back to that. And then it cuts back to Jason Alexander and Fisher Stevens or not Fisher Stevens. It was somebody else, I think, talking about they're going to hit on these girls or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why is this important to the movie? And it's not. Has nothing to do with the movie. It's just like a weird random moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was trying to think like, it's so evident when you watch this movie, the type of people that wrote it and how they are and how much they are real life, you know? You could easily chalk this up to like, well, at the time, they probably were a low budget movie, so they got to get in violence, sex, nudity, but at the level that is here is pretty exploitive. Like it's just
super exploitive. Yeah.
So it just like never, I don't know. That was like the only like one of the deteriorating factors of this movie was just having that hangover the whole movie.
But then like we were talking about like everything else about it was kind of pretty fun, pretty rad. Yeah.
Yeah.
The way almost every scene was set up, there was something kind of like goofy about the setup. Like everything, like I said, was very sitcom-y, like that era of like, oh, Bosom Buddies or like Three's Company sort of style, like what? And then they would like cut to like a good example is the kids are all talking at the very cold open of the movie, and then is there a wraparound? Like somebody's having a campfire tell? Is that what's going on? Because I didn't understand why that was added at the end. Anyway.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll let you know. Because it's based because there's that particular story about the janitor at the summer camp who was pranked and killed by it is like the Cropsey story. Yeah. It's like an urban legend. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's an urban legend that out there. So I think that was what they were trying to simulate, like a couple of different times.
You're talking about when the one about the kid who had potentially Down syndrome or something like that, and he went swimming, but the camp counselors weren't paying attention because they were banging.
Yeah. So supposedly, I did read some IMDb trivia, and Tom Savini said that supposedly the script was written before Friday the 13th, even though there's just like a million similarities to it. So.
Yes.
yeah. Sure. Wrote before. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure, Tom.
Sure. I love you, Tom. You do master of effects horror, but yeah, I don't know if I buy that.
But yeah, all these kids are like saying like, oh, you win, you want to do it, oh, it's gonna be so funny. And then their whole prank, like I said, like everything seems like a slapsticky, like why would anybody do that? They found a decaying skull and they thought, oh, super cool, instead of like, we should contact the authorities. Like, oh, super cool, this decaying skull with a bunch of worms in it. What if we put a candle in it and we wake up the weird camp janitor? Question mark? I don't know. I'm not sure what his role was. By all banging, tapping outside his window in like a comically framed sort of style, like we knew exactly where our heads would be. And then he'll freak out. And then this one candle is going to light his sheets on fire.
Yeah.
And super unfortunate that he sleeps in the same building that is full of gasoline and kerosene and full of lamps, because then the whole place explodes.
So what, you don't sleep near your kerosene gasoline by your bed? No,
and I just like how they set that up, where like they're sneaking in and putting the thing in there, and then they you keep walking by a bunch of like lanterns and like kerosene and gasoline, like a comical amount of gasoline tanks for no reason. And oh, yeah, he's, like, I wonder what's gonna really happen here.
Subtle about it.
And then yeah, then that's when it cuts to our only I think the only black person in the movie, the orderly, talking mm-hmm. to like another doctor or whoever he is, and like, oh man, you're never gonna get this image out of your head. But then he repeats something like that, like, I don't know, 1,000 times in like a this
and the longest possible walk. Yeah. Yeah,
like 3-minute scene of him walking down like a 20-foot hallway. Oh, yeah. You're never gonna get this image out of your head. You just wait. And then once in a while that other guy would chime in, like, oh, I've seen some stuff, like, not like this.
Yeah.
And then like how he like opens the curtain and it's just a shot of the orderly, and it's just he gives like a oh yeah, you're never gonna get this image out of your head. I think like at that point I'd be like, I don't want to see this anymore.
I'd be completely bored.
Yeah. You're wasting my time. Yeah, but then like he gets grabbed by the wrist by this janitor, camp janitor guy.
Yeah.
That's all yeah, that
happens. Cranky, really. Or what is it? Or what is it? Cropsy. There you go. Yeah. And then, and then after that, it feels like one of those like really kind of loose movies, right? Where the acting is kind of like feels very like not a lot of direction. It's like basically just like they're young kids and being told like, oh, talk about this and talk about that, and it seems very like, maybe it's because Jason Alexander is such a good actor. He was quite excellent in this movie.
It was great. I mean, so was Fisher Stevens.
Fisher Stevens fucking amazing at this, yeah. And then I didn't realize Holly Hunter was in this until I caught like the side profile of her, and then I heard her laugh, and I was like, oh yeah, that's Holly Hunter. Amazing.
Oh, okay. I mean, I didn't catch that. I don't know. I think it's because this is going to sound rude, but it's like they cast a lot of the female actors to look almost exactly the same. Like they're looking for a very particular type of like,
yeah,
woman.
I wonder why.
These characters.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And then of course all the dudes were like wildly different looking people. I mean, not all of them, but you know,
yeah.
Like who the fuck looks like Jason Alexander and who the fuck looks like Fisher Stevens? Like you know who these people
right.
are. Unless, yeah, except for Fisher Stevens, where you're like, is this guy Indian? Just kidding.
He apologized for that, all right?
Like, it was his fault. He finally gets, like, a leading role in a movie. And
yeah, like, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he didn't take it serious. I know we're going off on a tangent, but, it, like, how do you take a movie serious about, like, so it's about this robot who's got, like, tank legs. And by that, I mean, like, they're just, like, tank wheels for legs. And he's going to be your best friend. But yeah.
I'm waiting for fucking, what's his name? Bronson Pinchot to apologize for Balky.
There's going to be a lot of apologizing, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I gotta give a shout out to Ben Kingsley though. I think a lot of people are waiting for him to apologize for Gandhi. I'm like, you know, he's actually Indian, right?
I know, right? You're like, fuck off. Like, how do you guys not know he's Indian? He needs to apologize first for what is it? The Mandarin or the fuck?
No comment.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's right.
Okay, no comment. It's fine in my head.
You know, the art department in that movies completely are great. But
all right, going back to it. So yeah, 5 years later is what it said. Cropsey's flesh has healed back nicely together. He kind of looks like a goopy guy. Yeah, goopy guy. And he's like, you know what? I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to go ahead and get up and put on this trench coat and top hat. Look like those images Toxic Avenger. The neighborhood watch things in neighborhoods. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's like the dude with the big hat.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my revenge on these kids that are definitely still there after 5 years.
Well,
definitely still going to be children.
Definitely still there. Yeah. Yeah.
The deaths were kind of fun, even though some of them I'm like, did that person die or no? What happened?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can tell where they ran out of money, to try to do anything.
Final sequence. Yeah, they completely ran out of money.
Yeah. Final. Or like the raft scene where all the canoes had gone missing, so they have to fashion a raft in like split second.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it there already? Or like,
no, they built one. They built one. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I thought, but I was like, did they build it in like 2 seconds?
Well, they're camp folk. You know,
they know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing out there. It's the 70s camp stuff. Happens.
You know, Jason Alexander builds a boat and Fisher Steven, lives up to his name and starts catching those fish.
That's. Yeah.
Yeah. But aside from that, like this camp looked like it was going to be a lot of fun too, because there were a lot of anything? BB guns, right? Or something.
Yeah. Yep.
They could like walk around the campgrounds like willy nilly, like it's all good. There's only one shower for everybody, it looks like, and it's outside.
As showers are.
Yeah. Oh man, I don't know. I hate to say how much I enjoyed this movie. I actually was talking about it last night with somebody else, and I'm like, yep, all these bad things about it. With that said.
It is a rather enjoyable movie, surprisingly, for what it is.
Yeah. But it's one of those things, like most of the 80s movies that I love. Yeah, they're very problematic.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Separate
absolutely. The art from art.
This was kind of hard because it definitely feels like one perspective.
Yeah. I mean, it was very, again, like the gratuitous shots of like that underage girl's butt. I'm like, what is this, dude? Like, why? How do you even like, I was already upset. Like, I just only hope the worst for Harvey Weinstein. Is he dead yet?
Nah, just about. He's insignificant.
Yeah. Like, how are you?
I always heard that Bob was the horror guy. Bob was the one that did New Line Cinema. Like he kind of had like the, he liked horror B movie stuff more.
Because this one does say it's the writer's original story by Harvey Weinstein, created by Harvey Weinstein.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bob Weinstein wrote the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but yeah, again, just getting back at it, like those gratuitous shots while they're playing softball. I'm like, how do you even like what about this is attractive? Or like, how can you be this creepy? Why could have there been camp counselors that, like, I mean, I'm not saying do this, but like, oh, like hot women, adult camp counselors. How about like focus on them? Because right now I don't want to watch the rest of this movie.
Yeah, they had very little, they gave the women very little agency or respect throughout the movie. Yeah.
God, 1,000,000%. And like, spoiler alert, I guess, but like, even the.
Wait, should we go to spoilers? We should go to spoilers.
Let's go to spoilers.
Go to spoilers real quick. All right.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
Like, some of the women in this movie that don't do anything at all are just like nice people end up getting fucking killed too. I'm like, what?
Everybody gets fucking killed in this movie for the most part.
There's like no rules. Yeah. Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
Actually, you're right. Every single person in this movie gets killed except for two people, right? I think.
Mm-hmm. I think two people, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I don't remember.
The pervert.
Yeah.
The pervert and then our like hero, the main camp counselor, who's like defending the pervert for I don't know what reason.
I guess which I spoiled and he was one of the kids.
Yeah, which I'm assuming the only reason he was defending the pervert kid was because he felt guilty about what he had done.
Right, yeah. 100%.
So that's interesting. Real quick, I'm just going to...
Yes?
I know the folks at home can't see this, but this beer that I'm drinking right now, those are supposed to be two hands shaking, but it straight up looks like two dicks that are...
are touching.
Embracing.
Yeah. That are head shaking. Yes, 100%. That's a dick shake.
Shout out to Half Acre for Hallow Double IPA. And their dick shaking logo.
Dick shaking logo, yeah. Very much are they two dicks. Greeting, shaking hands.
So how does Jason Alexander die? I know he's on the raft. It's one of the raft people when they fashion that raft.
I think they just like slash his face in a peculiar way. Because some people got it bad. Some people got like fingers and limbs cut from the shears he carried. Yeah.
Fisher Stevens got his fingers cut off and then he fell in the water. So I didn't think he died. And then his body was floating.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way flat wooden rafts work is if like five or six people die on that raft, even if they like fall off the raft, their bodies are going to float underneath the raft. That's how the science works there. That's why when they went and investigated, there are all these dead bodies underneath the raft.
Mm-hmm.
Because wood is actually magnets, and our blood has so much iron in it. I'm trying to make sense of how that worked out because they were like way down river. way down river, and the raft floated back to them somehow.
Yeah. I think they found them, didn't they? Or
oh, you know what? No, yeah. Our hero and the other camp counselor lady were following alongside the river.
Something like that. I don't remember. I just remember them, like, the incident and then them finding the boat. Somewhere along those lines. And then they finding just all the dead kids. But.
Yeah, and I gotta say, the deaths were cool, but I don't think any of them were really that memorable.
No, not in a substantial way, but it was, I don't know, still entertaining. It was a decent enough plot to get us there. And a pretty, like, believable story. Like, I kind of feel bad for, what's his name? Cropsby or Cross?
Cropsy?
Cropsy, yeah, because he literally just, he didn't do anything wrong. Because we're told that he'll go, oh, yeah, this guy's so, like, a piece of shit, but like we never got to see it. He was sleeping and he got lit his fire and then tragically, you know, got burned, survived. And then there's a world that hates him. I mean, it's the perfect,
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's just for Cropsy. There's no reason.
There's really no, like, I think this movie went out of its way to portray him as sympathetic. So,
yeah.
Which was weird.
The movie does a good job of making most of these characters like shitty people.
Mm-hmm. Especially the kids. Yeah.
But... so you're not terribly upset when Crossy kills them. And it's not like, I mean, at this point you'd be like, Crossy, I mean, you shouldn't have killed these kids. They weren't the ones that did this, but they basically were, like, were the same shitty type of people.
Yeah. It's not like they were particularly like redeemable characters either. They're pretty, like we said, like rapey. All the men were rapey. And they, you know, what is it? Like forced women into sexual situations. I don't know.
I will say I did appreciate the most relatable thing about this was the older kids, like the dudes would take their shirts off because they were kind of like, I guess they worked out. But then, like, mm-hmm. I guess the nerdy of the side of the group were, like, Jason Alexander and Fisher Stevens always had a shirt on. In fact, Jason Alexander at one point had a baseball tee on, and he jumped into the lake.
He's like, I'm not taking my shirt off like this. Like,
fuck that. Yeah. Like, I'm not taking my shirt off, and I refuse to cut my hair, because these puppies are going to stay there for the rest of my life. That's what he said.
But well, he jumped in, and then when he got out, he lost his hair.
Yeah.
That's what.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what else is there to say about this movie? It just kind of happens.
Yeah. Pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty good little movie. Do you have any other thoughts? You want to just go to rate it?
Yeah, let's just rate it. Yeah.
Okay.
Man, I'm gonna have a tough time with it.
Okay. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you need. Show us your sexy.
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Bernie a reluctant 6.66 sexy spooky.
What's that? Yeah. I was thinking around the same. I'd say 7. I'd say give this a 7. Pretty good, despite what's evident about the history of this movie. Yeah. It's pretty enjoyable slasher. Actually, I would say it's, you know, a cut above the rest, pun intended. So it's, as far as slashers go, and from what the slashers I've seen, like this was actually one of the better ones, more memorable ones. I would say more memorable.
More, yeah, definitely more. Like, this is something I'm like, oh man, The Burning. It's bad, but if you guys want to watch it, I'm down. But I'm proud of both of us for, I guess, I'm assuming at the same time when we start the movie and the Miramax logo came up, we're both like, ooh.
Yeah, dude, nobody explained this to me before I picked it. And I was like, too late, I already picked it. It's like, fuck. Yeah, do your research, guys. A lot of cancelable movies.
It's unfortunate because Miramax has got a shit ton of movies we grew up and loved.
Shakespeare in Love. I'm just kidding. <It's> just,
exactly.
It's my first go-to Shakespeare in Love. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.